Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Get Into It with Gila. I'm Gila Glassberg, your host. And today I am sharing another episode with Shira Fruchter, who has been on the podcast many times already. And Shira and I are good friends, and we speak a lot outside of recording podcasts. And we just have all these really fun conversations about intuitive eating and internal family systems, otherwise known as IFS, which is a modality of therapy that Shira Fruchter specializes in. So if this is the first time you're hearing Shira, go back to some other episodes that we've done together where she explains her passion for IFS and how she came to use it in her therapy sessions and how she uses it professionally. And it's really, really interesting. We also have actually done a live IFS session together, which is for purchase on my website, www.gilaglassberg.com, if you'd actually want to hear how that episode went. It was really amazing. And we actually spoke about how to, reconcile really loving intuitive eating and also feeling pain or grief about the fact that our bodies will probably never change. And that's a big thing for people who go through the intuitive eating process, is that I think they have this dream that, like, if they do intuitive eating correctly, they'll lose weight. And that's actually, like, kind of like one of the main points of intuitive eating, is to, like, let go of the weight. But it's so ingrained in us that we can't possibly fathom that that could really be a goal. So I think that's why sometimes using therapy to help change our belief systems around weight and body image is, like, a really amazing tool. So go back and check those episodes out, and I'll try to put the links in the show notes. But today's episode is really about, I think it's ironic that we experience anxiety about using a therapy session correctly, which is definitely something that I struggle with. And when I brought that up to Shira, she said, oh my gosh, that's so normal. Let's talk about it on the podcast. So that's really basically what we decided to do. And I think Shira shed so much light. She has so much experience and knowledge on so many topics, and this one as well. So I think that if that is something that you struggle with, or that's something that is interesting to you, give it a listen. And I think that you'll really, really enjoy it. And if you want to hear more episodes like this, you could go back to all my lists on Spotify. You could go to my website, www.gilaglassberg.com, where many of my episodes are there, and some of them are on YouTube as well. You could check that out. And if you are interested in working with me privately, you can schedule a 20-minute free consultation through my website. And you could also purchase some of my live courses on my website. As I said before, you could reach out if you want to join a support group, if you are looking to hire somebody to come speak in a school. I actually do that. And next month in February, I'm speaking, God willing, in two high schools. And again, if you've been here for a while, you know I started actually teaching in high school. So if you really want to, if you have a school in mind, or your child's school, that really needs, like, help learning about eating disorders and intuitive eating and self-care and body positivity, reach out if you are looking to have somebody come speak live. And for many of you, it's winter break now, so I want to just say, on the one hand, enjoy your vacation, and I hope it goes really well and you're able to take time off and engage in some really high dose of self-care. On the other hand, I know that winter break can be really hard for so many people, because it's unstructured time and it's time that is very different than your usual schedule. Not just unstructured, but just really different. And maybe food's different, and maybe sleep is different, and maybe movement's different, and maybe being with your kids longer is different. And I just want to validate the experience that for many people that can be really challenging. So I guess maybe now is a good time to just say, like, make your list of podcasts you want to listen to, or that you don't want to listen to. You just want to, like, veg or take a bath, listen to music, light candles, go for a jog, don't go for a jog, go swimming, don't go swimming, whatever it is. I hope that you take even just 10 minutes to think about how you want your winter break to go, and try as much as you can to utilize some self-care tools. Okay, without further ado, enjoy the episode and have a great day. Hi, everyone, and welcome to my podcast, Get Into It with Gila. I know you're going to love the content here, because you will gain inspiration, powerful tools and insights, and valuable knowledge. If you want more of this, please visit my website at www.gilaglassberg.com, or visit me on Instagram at Gila Glassberg. I'm Gila Glassberg, a registered dietitian and intuitive eating counselor.
I've come to realize by counseling many, many women that this work is much deeper and greater than food and body image. It's the bigger picture challenges we face of love, belonging, acceptance, what our true values and goals are, noticing them, addressing them, and gaining skills to move forward. If you have been struggling with what your life's purpose is, or you just feel stuck in general and don't know what's holding you back, this podcast will enlighten and inspire you to take action and move forward. This podcast is about other women in the 21st century who feel that losing weight will fix all their problems or somehow meet their unmet needs. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Get Into It with Gila. I'm Gila Glassberg, your host, registered dietitian and intuitive eating counselor. And today I have on again, Shira Fruchter. Hi, Shira.
Hi.
How are you?
So good to be here.
I'm so happy that you're here. I love having you on.
I love being here.
Okay, good. Okay, so let's get started. So today we decided to cover the topic of what it's like for clients to come into a therapy session and feel anxious about using their time wisely, which I've just found out today is very common.
Extremely.
Yes. Like every client you see in a day, or like 70%, 50%, or you just hear it a lot.
I know. I think that people are just, there's this thing about using your time in therapy.
Okay.
How to make sure you use every minute, and you have your agendas, and you have your goals, and is it worth my money, and is it worth my time? And it's a lot of, I find there's a lot of stress around like making sure you milk the session for what it's worth.
But I'm sure that makes the session less like productive. Does it?
That's the irony. That is the irony that, you know, you could spend so much time wondering if we're going to use the session on the right things and the right topics, and do we use our session well, and have we been making progress? And then sometimes that takes the whole session. So,
but is that important to cover from the therapist's perspective? Because there's obviously like other, is there underlying stuff going on, or is it just that like therapy is expensive and not everybody values therapy? So it is kind of hard to know if we value it.
Totally. Meaning, I think there's a lot of, you know, issues at play. I think therapy is very expensive, and it's, you know, it's, money is a real thing, and people really are paying for this. And that it's a very, you know, I know the prices in America are way higher than they are in Israel, but yeah, it's definitely very expensive. And I think the concept of therapy is very vague, and it is very hard to measure and operationalize change.
Mm-hmm.
People are very confused, like, is this working? What's the best way to use my time? Am I getting anywhere? Am I seeing progress? So I think it's a combination of not necessarily, you know, being, you know, completely attuned to what therapy really is, and the fact that it is very expensive. Yeah.
So what is like, I guess like from a therapist perspective, what is it that, like, how do you measure people's results? Do you like have a yardstick for like, you know, telling a client like, oh, you really reached that goal? I always wonder that, actually, like, even for me, like, because I don't weigh people, it's not as tangible. For me, at least, I see progress just because I see like somebody's not as scared about something or so as intense, but they don't see it as progress, you know?
They don't.
Maybe if I bring it to their attention, but like, it's just less measurable. So I guess that's more stressful.
Right. No, it is very stressful. Listen, I think it is very important to set goals and allow people to understand what they're going to do in the therapy room and over the course of the work. And not only to set goals, but I tell a lot of my supervisees that it's really critical that the goals that people set are goals that we really can reach.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the actual activity and the effort put into setting goals in and of itself is a very therapeutic process, because mm-hmm. it shows us as clinicians what are our clients asking for.
Mm-hmm.
If I am very type A and very perfectionist and rigid and scheduled, tell me my goal is to be really laid back, I wouldn't call that a goal.
Right.
I mean, up to the therapist to really be able to be honest and be able to say, like, you know, let's look at that. Like, that we're not going to really be able to change a nature,
mm-hmm.
you know, and an entire wiring. And so that would be a very big thing for me, to look at the person's goals and to be able to somehow concretize that. So when people say, you know, be less anxious, have a better self-esteem, those goals are too vague.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to be less anxious and have a better self-esteem.
Right.
But the question is, what does that mean for you? And again, I think allowing people to explore what they mean when they're coming into therapy and what their hope is, what they're wishing for is so critical. Like, and I ask a client, you know, what would it mean to you to be less anxious? Teach me about anxiety for you. You know, without stress, what does the anxious part look like for you? And how does it manifest? And we can get some kind of, you know, concrete understanding of what anxiety is or how low self-esteem, you know, shows up in their life, then perhaps we can make goals that we are, you know, are attainable. And I think that does calm a lot of the, you know, the stress around therapy. We can make it feel like it's something we could actually accomplish. We're just talking about low self-esteem. We're just talking about, you know, anxiety. So that's definitely one of the things that I think helps.
I'm thinking, like, as you're talking, I'm thinking, like, why don't we know what, when we call a therapist and we make a session with them, like, shouldn't we know? Like we should know, like, I'm calling this therapist because we don't know. I guess we don't know. We're like, I'm calling this therapist because I keep dating guys that are like really mean to me, right? So that's like, that's the therapist is going to be like, oh, you're dating guys that are really mean. I was just listening to the podcast, Dear Therapist. I don't know if you listen to it, but do you listen to it by Lori Gottlieb and Guy Winch? You know what I'm talking about?
No,
It's a really good
no, I
podcast.
didn't hear it.
It's really good. Like, because she was talking about like dating guys that were bad for her, so that's why I brought that up. But like,
Oh, okay, good example.
they're coming to you, but they're trying to understand why they're doing that, right? So you're like exploring like the codependent client or like the
Exactly.
right. So they
Yeah,
don't even
100%.
really know. They don't, that's the thing. When they come to you and you say, what are your goals for therapy? The real answer is they don't really know.
So I think, like, that's what I'm saying. I think contracting goals is really a part of the process of where we begin the healing work of therapy. You know, which is, well, what can we truly accomplish here? We definitely, as everyone knows, can't change anybody. So I'm dating a lot of mean guys. We can't make guys not mean. But what's that about for you? You know, and the IMS famous U-turn is really helping people see themselves. So many clients come to therapy wanting to change their spouse. That's the classic, you know. And I understand so many times people come to therapy if you're married to someone that has an addiction or married to someone that, you know, underwent a lot of trauma or married to someone that's struggling with depression. It is really, it's really hard to live with that, you know, and there's this like unconscious wish that we could, therapists can somehow make it go away or make it better. And I wish we can. I wish we can.
What is this IFS famous U-turn? I don't know what it is.
Okay, so good. I thought I mentioned the last podcast. So what the U-turn basically is in life, we often look outwards. So most people, when they're talking about an issue, it's about someone else. You know, did this to me, she did this to me, she's, you know, messed up, or he's messed up, or he's mean. He triggered me. Very outward. We really want to look at where it's touching us inside. So we do what we call a U-turn, which is turning it back to me. Where is it touching me? Because two people can go through the same exact event, and for one, it's very intense, and for someone else, it didn't really touch them so much. So we say it's intense, it's yours. If something is intense for you, it might be both of yours, but it's touching you somewhere.
If it's intense,
So
it's yours.
yeah, it's intense, it's yours. So that's a big IFS terms phrase. So, you know, we have this with everything. We have, you know, your mother-in-law comes to visit you and you're triggered because she said something. If it's intense, it's yours.
Interesting.
So where is it touching you? You know, or your child's, you know, why is the one of your children, you know, get you more activated than another child? Where is that child touching you? Why when you're that, where's it touching you? When dated that guy, where is it touching you? And I think again, another way we can really make change is by looking at ourselves because we can't change anyone else. But once it's very empowering to see where it's touching you because then you can actually do something about it.
And first of all, I remember when there's hysteria, there's
If it's
history.
hysterical, it's historical. Yes,
It's
go ahead.
hysterical, historical. I really like that one.
Yes.
Yeah, but another I think what another thing is that's like coming up for me is that like there used to be a lot of stigma with therapy, right? Now it's like definitely better, but it's there still is stigma. Like the same way we would go to a doctor when we're having like physical issues, we would go to like a therapist when we're having like emotional issues, but there is still like
It's not like everybody, goes to the doctor the same way everyone goes to a therapist, unfortunately.
Right.
But the interesting thing about that is that when somebody who actually goes to therapy is willing to work on themselves, usually, because it's the people
You
that
hope.
don't go to you hope, but I'm saying the people who for sure won't go to therapy for sure won't like own it.
Yeah, that's very hard. Yeah, people who won't go to therapy, it's very, very hard. I think that's a lot of the the downfalls to marriage is when one spouse refuses to go for therapy. Like, if the
Right.
person's not gonna take the bait and say, "I want to work on myself, I want to take responsibility, I want to see how I contribute," it's very hard to really, have a partner to work with in a dynamic. Yes, one spouse can change the dance and change the dynamic, but if both people are willing and ready to do their work and to see how they contribute, it's so much easier when a person will knock over therapy. That's why if there's no will in therapy, it's very hard to make change.
Right. You have
Sometimes
to
people
want
come.
it. Right.
Why, when you force a teenager to go to therapy, it's not very effective. Or here in Israel for the year, when people are forcing girls to come for therapy, it's not as effective because they don't want to be there.
Right.
The most experienced therapist in the world, the best therapist in the world, the top expert in the world, can they do with someone doesn't want themselves, does not want to get help?
Right.
But yeah. The opposite is also true. Someone that comes and really is ready and wants and willing and open, there's so much that can be done. Yeah.
Right. Right. Do you think that everybody needs therapy?
No, I don't think everybody needs
No?
therapy.
Really?
I don't think everyone needs therapy. I think therapy is a luxury,
Yeah.
for some people. And I think that anyone would benefit and enjoy, therapy because to get 50 full minutes, just talk about yourself
Right.
with no interruptions, no phone calls, no texts. The
Yeah.
therapist can't go to the bathroom.
Right.
The therapist can barely blow their nose. I'm
Right.
saying you have
Yeah.
50 full minutes. That's very rare.
Yes, I
So
know. You're right.
when we slow down and hear ourselves talk and hear what's going on and listen inward, it's an amazing way to improve and to grow and to just gain insight and clarity to be the better, better people to then therefore be better spouses and better friends and better siblings and better parents and better children. So need is a strong word. I don't think everybody needs therapy, but I think anyone can benefit from therapy. And I think for many people, therapy is a luxury,
So
that they
do
can always
you,
want to give themselves.
so when you like in your first session or first few sessions, you create goals with clients, does that always minimize the stress about using the time wisely?
So no, it's a good question. Not always. There is definitely this. There are certain people, and again, I wouldn't say it's everybody, but those of you out there that are listening, when it's you, that
Right.
feeling of, oh my gosh, well, how am I going to use my time? I'm here, so much is weighing on me. Which thing should I talk about? What's the
Right.
most important thing to talk about?
Yeah.
Are we following a path? Do we pick up from last week? Every time a
Right.
session ends, say we're going to pick up with it, but then we don't.
Yes.
That
Oh
all of that.
my gosh. So I'm just gonna share this that I went to therapy today, and that's what we were talking. That's why we decided to do this. So like, I have been seeing this therapist for like, I don't know, like 4 years, like a really long time, and it was, I think I started seeing her maybe longer than 4 years, well, after my mom died. And obviously when I was seeing, and then I think I saw her for a full year every single week. And that was like really necessary to help me cope. But then I didn't feel like I had to go every single week, but that was really stressful for me because I'm like, should I go every week? Should I go every other week? Should I just, that's the problem also. Should I call when I'm stressed? But what if she doesn't have a session? Then I have to wait. And the
Exactly.
session comes and I'm not stressed anymore. Is it still there? Should I bring it up?
Exactly. Exactly. Yes, everybody wants to go when it's urgent. Everybody wants to go when they're in that bad mood, when
Right.
they have that fight,
Right.
when they're feeling depressed. Everybody
Right.
wants to go for therapy then, of course, for sure, for sure. And it is very hard when you come in those sessions and you sit down and you're like, wow, I've got nothing today.
Right.
Everything just so fine. Why am I here? And
Right.
sometimes best sessions come from those times.
Yeah.
Yes, when everything's quiet. And one of the things we do in IFS is we can look at any part at any time because we really
Right.
can, in our mind's eye, almost see the triggers. Somebody, had a really hard day on Sunday, and they see the therapist on Thursday, and they worked it out since then, and they're back to themselves, and they're fine. We can go back to Sunday in their mind's eye and say, okay, can you just check in with Sunday? And you see yourself, what was happening, and how do you feel towards then? And then we have much more space actually. you know, we'll say an IFS language, we're not blended with that part.
Mm-hmm.
So we have more self, we have more space to then look at what was going on Sunday, meet it, and have more perspective so that we could hopefully do it better the next time. Because we're always smarter after.
Right.
We're so much wiser.
Right. So something that you said before about like, where is it going to start? Are we going to pick up from next time? Is that like a thing that, that like you want to pick up from next time as a therapist?
Well, I think there's different. Yeah. I think there's different styles of clinicians. I really think that. I personally, I don't believe in like a sheet of picking up from last time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, anyone that works with me knows that I very much just begin wherever the person's ready.
Right.
Because I really feel like when a whole week goes by, so much has happened, so much has transpired, so many encounters, I have no idea where the person wants to go.
Right.
If I were to say, okay, last time we were talking about your mother and how she's overly critical, or
right.
you know, we're talking about part of you that's very depressed. To me, over the week, so much could have happened. And
right.
I might be missing something.
Right.
So I prefer to ask the client, you know, where are you at? How do you want to use your time today?
Right.
That feels, for me, feels more attuned. And then sometimes people say, we go back to last week.
Right.
You check, where were we at last week? You know, I always jot down at the end of sessions just where we're at so that I have kind of, you know, a note to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm so happy to go back to last week. I'm happy for it to come from them.
Right.
And, you know, there's this feeling that clients sometimes have, like they're coming in and like, do the work for me. They're
right.
Like, fix it. Make it better. Here I am.
Right.
Okay.
Right, right, right.
Start.
Right.
And it just doesn't work that way.
Right.
It really doesn't work that way. And we're not like expert magic people, you know, and
yeah.
People are really around themselves. Like there's really no magic, you know, and I think the ability to tune into ourselves and be able to really be able to say, this needs my attention today, or this is what's really, you know, kind of loud for me. That is so much the process of change.
Mm-hmm.
Our ability to say what's going on.
Right.
And that's how we stop our automatic pilot. And that's how we make better choices. So the tuning in that we do in the therapy room of sitting down and taking a moment and pausing and saying, okay, where am I at? What's going on? Let me get my bearings, take my emotional temperature. It's the kind of thing we want to do in general in life.
Right.
You know,
right.
When we're coming up in life and with our family members or with friends, and we're feeling something, something's moving us. So we want to be able to stop and say, hey, what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're learning that language in the therapy room.
Right. Like I'm assuming one of the goals of therapy for you with your clients is like that eventually they'll, like your clients will graduate, like you'll give them the tools and that they could do it on their own.
So definitely, I think that, the language for me, the language of IFS is a huge goal. You know, those of you who know IFS have an understanding of that. If you don't know IFS, I would say that the ability to meet our problems compassionately and to meet ourselves kindly is really like, I guess, like the most basic, you know, foundation, I think, to change, because we can't change when we hate something. Like change does not come through hate.
Mm-hmm.
Change really through love, the same way like a child that's being very hard or struggling, if we hate them, that's not going to motivate them to change.
Right.
It's like everyone knows you have to love your child in order to really help give that foundation for change.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look inwards or at our problems, at our issues, at our struggles, at our triggers, we almost always meet them with hate and
mm-hmm.
with dislike,
right.
And with, you know, criticism and with contempt. Like we're not kind to ourselves. I'm sure you see this. People bring in their issues and
they hate themselves.
They hate themselves for them.
Right.
Yeah, they really hate themselves. And you know, I forgot who said it, but I heard they say, I wish I could quote who said it, but that pain plus acceptance is pain. Pain minus acceptance is suffering.
Mm.
That's really what happens, that because we're fighting our issues, we're really, really suffering.
Right.
And that's really what suffering is. But if we can meet our problems and say, okay, meet our pain and say, okay, this is it. This is what's where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's just pain, and then we can learn how to deal with it. But
right.
I find that a lot of the work is helping people move away from hating and not accepting and fighting
right.
the reality of what's going on. And until we really move away from all that criticism and all that, you know, negativity towards the issue, that takes a little while until we
mm-hmm.
actually do the work.
Right.
So to me, yes. And then once they have that language, then already like any, whatever comes their way, they're meeting it with a much kinder, softer, you know, energy. Because it's not what we do, but it's how we do it, you know?
Right.
But energy is doing it. So yes, when you say graduate, I'll be honest, Gila, people have a really hard time graduating therapy.
Yeah.
Hard time. People definitely graduate from weekly therapy.
Okay.
Most definitely. And usually my clients wean off to every other week. And then to once a month, but my clients, they always come back. You know what I mean? At some point, they're going to pop back in because life is ever evolving.
Right.
You know, seeing clients through single, engaged, married, baby, baby two.
Right, right.
Stages of development and different issues that arise. So people do graduate from weekly therapy, but, you know, my door is always open and they could always pop back in. For people could pop back in for a session, you know, something got, you know, I get this all the time. Can I get a session? You know, something got activated in my marriage, or can I have a session? One of my kids are making me nuts.
Right.
And it's just a session, not long-term ongoing therapy, but it's a session.
I feel like, yeah, I feel like we did, this is already like our third or fourth podcast. So I'm just remembering that from the first time that we recorded, you said something about that, like that I'm trying to remember. Sorry.
I definitely can't remember.
Oh, what I asked you that, like, why IFS? And you said because you wanted to have some sort of like framework or structure. So I feel like obviously the people who come to you want that framework or structure. So no?
I don't know.
Or they like it. Or they like it because they see it.
I don't think they always know. I don't think they always know. Listen, therapy is a shit-off, Gila. Therapy is such a shit-off.
Right.
Like it's two human beings in a room and you have to vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Shit-off like anything else. You know, and it doesn't make a therapist better or worse or a client better or worse. But like, I really believe therapy is a shidduch and people could trigger people in ways that it's really about them.
Right.
You know,
right.
Someone's going to be mean. And I remind them of their mother or something. And that triggers them. I don't know. Like, who knows? You know, we all have energies to us.
It's true.
And I really learn that. Yeah. That therapist. I don't know. People do come for IFS now because IFS is such a rave and such a, like, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Exciting. But no, not 10 years ago. I have clients that, you know, that saw me from 10 years ago, you know, and then like only now realize that I was doing IFS. They had no idea.
Right. I remember you saying that you didn't.
I never thought about it. Yeah.
Right. That's so interesting.
Seamless. For me, it's like seamless.
Interesting. Right. Because that's what spoke. That's really what spoke to you. So that's what you do. But I'm assuming
that. Spoke to me. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm still assuming that, okay, yeah, it's a shidduch, but also like there are certain modalities of therapy that different people are more drawn to.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Like, yeah.
Even at different stages.
It's somatic. Yeah.
Like I've heard people tell me that they just really hate like IFS. They think it's like so weird and hippy dippy.
Really? I would love to hear about that. People hate it.
I've heard that.
It's hippy dippy. It depends on the clinician, Gila. It depends on the clinician. Every IFS clinician is different.
Right.
Some IFS clinicians are hippy dippy. I'm saying they're much more like maybe meditative and they I've had clients ask me to do meditations and I don't do that in my sessions. I don't meditate you.
Right.
But there must be therapists that do.
Yeah.
And closing your eyes, like an IFS, some clinicians are very into closing your eyes and IFS definitely invites you can close your eyes if you want, but you don't have to close your eyes.
Right.
You know? It's really, I it's interesting because people say that, like, because some people, I guess, focus more on like, does the part have an image? Does the part have a picture? And can you feel in your body? And everyone, again, every clinician focuses on different ways to meet the part.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, like, I have seen, like, I have the same therapist for many years, but I have seen other therapists along the way for other types of things, like IFS or EFT or EMDR, right? And, like, I felt like the personality wasn't a shidduch. But I still gained from the modality.
That speaks to you. That speaks to you.
The modality, like the
no, maybe this to you, that who you are, that you're able to gain, even though you didn't. I love the shidduch that you can gain from the person and their modality, and even though you know that person wouldn't be your best friend, you could take what they had to offer.
I thought it was more like because of her skill was very good, so I was able to be like, okay, that wasn't a personality match at all, but that's okay.
Right, that's amazing. Yeah, so like you definitely need to feel safe.
Right.
You know, like. You know, definitely for IFS, like maybe for some of these other, you know, modalities, there's not much talking going on, but
right,
you really need to feel safe. That's the, you know, the main thing is being able to feel safe and feel very accepted. One of the things I tell my clients, and I invite a lot of feedback between me and the client, and they say, like I've heard, it's evidence-based that the most amounts of feedback in, you know, the therapy room proves to make the most successful therapy, because essentially it's just, it's a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I really love when my clients have the courage to tell me what wasn't good for them or what didn't work for them, or, you know, make different requests that are important for them.
Feedback to you, like how the therapy's going, how they're, I've heard
session.
That. Yeah.
How was a session for you?
Right. So Rachel Tuckman, like, is a therapist, and she posts a lot on Instagram, and she does like AMAs, like Ask Me Anything, and people ask a lot of.
Wow, Ask Me Anything. Cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. You don't know about the Instagram world.
I don't know Instagram, so, and you can't even like get Instagram. You don't have Instagram.
Yeah, just stay away from it. But keep it that way. But it's cool because it does a lot of education of like. Of like actual therapy, like what kind of like what you're doing, that like people say, like, do I need to like my therapist? Of course you have to like your therapist. Or people say, like,
yes,
what should I do if I'm feeling stuck with my therapist? She's just right, tell your therapist, you know. And like, people, I do encourage clients to do that with me and with therapists, because it's like it's like, I guess they don't, they say that like there's like what happens in the therapy world is like a microcosm for what, how you interact outside of the therapy room. Is that a thing?
So it's possible. Yeah, it's a thing. Yeah, it's a thing. It is a thing. Yeah, listen, like in IFS, we're so not like analytical in that way. It's like very, like
cerebral
analysis.
The right word.
It's like, it's not necessarily cerebral either, IFS. Okay. It's actually not so cerebral, and it's not so analytical. It's very like just really being in the present with people and their parts. So like, yes, if a part shows up in my office, there is an understanding that this is a microcosm of other things, that likely this part shows up with other people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also an understanding that therapy is it's different, you know? So parts may show up in the therapy room that wouldn't show up elsewhere.
Right.
Perhaps, I don't know. I try to move away from assumptions and just really ask a lot of curiosity. I would just ask my client, like, is this familiar to you? Do you see yourself doing this anywhere else?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a little different. I'd probably just be really curious.
Mm-hmm.
I think assumptions are dangerous. Like we don't know, and we make up so many stories.
Right.
Brene Brown, always making up stories.
Right.
So much safer to ask, and just get feedback, and to try to create enough safety where your client can tell you what they feel.
Mm-hmm.
And the client, I think there's two things that, you know, it's important to use your time well, just to speak to those parts, I think, is really being able to tell the therapist what you need.
Right.
Like really being able to articulate what is important for you and what you would like to get out of the session. I think like using your time to think about how the session would be helpful is really helping the therapist.
Right.
The ability and be able to say, like, you know, can we spend time today on, you know, I guess in your case, probably Gila, it's probably all about their body and their food, right? But whichever elements of it they're coming in about.
Right.
So like, I'm assuming that, you know, they're going to come in and say, we talk about, you know, Yontif. You know, the upcoming holiday or whatever it is, you know, whatever they want to talk about, but coming in with something a little bit more focused, for the client. And I think when clients come in, you know, a little more empty, it's also something to notice just what happened over the week, what happened that you came in, you know, not thinking about anything. Sometimes that you learn that clients kind of shut it off during the week.
Right.
A lot of the success of therapy happens over the week between sessions.
Right.
And you start to notice that your therapy, you're hearing your therapy and the meta messages over the week, it's so major, because you want the therapy to land in different ways. You want to be able to hear, like, oh, right, we spoke about that in therapy. Oh, yeah, oh, that's what she meant. Oh, that. Oh, right, I want to bring this to my therapist and let her know. Ah,
right.
It's those moments between therapy. That's why when people come in and they say, like, let's meet twice a week. Let's meet three times a week. I just want to do this already. I want to get this done. I want to finish the issue. It doesn't work that way.
Interesting.
You can't. And speed.
Right. I've heard something interesting that really has been interesting to think about, that people say that, like, people rely, I've heard this in like my WhatsApp chats with other dietitians, therapists, whatever, that people rely too much on their therapist, and that's why they don't graduate, because they don't want to do the, because it's too hard to do the work. Not that they don't want to, everyone wants to, I'm assuming, but that was really interesting to me. That's why I do offer like every week or every other week, because I do find that some people really do need like 2 weeks to process the information and practice it versus, and some people really do need every week and some people really do need twice a week in the beginning, you know, which is a lot. Yes. But
totally. Yeah. I mean, again, I don't think I'm biased, but I do feel like IFS clinicians are less likely to create dependency because it's so much about people with themselves. Mm-hmm. Like an IFS therapist, you're not in the room so much. There's not a lot of talking from the therapist. There's not a lot of expertise from the therapist's part. It's a lot of guiding the client within themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're taking is really learning more about themselves, which they could take home with them. Really not so much about the clinician. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I know, again, this is like one of the things about therapy. Like you can never leave and you're so dependent on the therapist. I don't know. I know a small percentage of IFS therapists, but the ones that I know and I've trained and I work with, I feel like they're not creating that dependency, honestly.
What about the people that like don't remember what you talked about in session? Is that like because they just don't write it down or because they really don't remember?
I think parts really shut it off.
Mm.
I think that's very important information for a clinician to recognize that people, you know, if someone's not remembering, because naturally when you spend 50 minutes on yourself, you're talking about things that are important, which again is really a clinician's responsibility to make sure that the therapy is being used appropriately and you're not right. wasting time with random curious questions about like recipes.
Right.
And allowing clients to just literally waste their time.
Right.
I think the ability to really hone in and, you know, really make sure the client's using the time what they want to use the time, like right. contracting. So you want to use 45 minutes on the recipe on the apple cobbler? Right. They say yes, and then that's great. How you dice your apples and the size, but otherwise,
you're funny, Shira. Right.
But where was I even going? I got stuck in the apple cobbler.
Are you making apple cobbler for Shabbos?
No, I should be though. I love apple crisp. No, I'm not. But it is Thursday actually, so it would make sense.
Yeah,
but
right.
Thursday night by me. Yeah, no. So I definitely think that's clinician's responsibility. But in terms of remembering, I think that when we're using the time on things that are really important to us, and especially in the IFS work, like it's such mindful, laser-like work.
Yeah.
It's hard to forget. Like when it's your life and it's something that you're working on, and you know, your sacred parts, people just remember, like you're spending an entire, you know, hour on the confrontational part or on the socially anxious part or on the OCD part. Like it usually does impact over the week because the experiential, you know, session that the brain waves already get wired, you know, with new neurons. Mm-hmm. So it really makes a difference. Like one good IFS session really impacts a week.
Mm-hmm.
So it would surprise me if a client kept coming back in and saying she has no recollection of last week's session. I would wonder about that part. Like the parts are shut off or there was too much pain to remember. Maybe we could kind of re-regulate throughout the week or at the end of the session. Like I'm very into consolidating the work before we actually end, like the second before we end.
Right.
1 minute so I get back to themselves.
Do you give them like weekly goals? Like, oh, like you're going to, no.
I'm not into weekly goals because again, it's very agendized. It's like, it makes it seem like therapy is like, has homework.
Right.
I think it's like that. Like we're working on ourselves on my Rosh Hashanah. Like we're not,
right.
not really bad. That's certain modalities do that.
Right.
The greatest homework that I encourage my clients is the invitation of noticing. Noticing is so major. It's a 50% change because I can come in and tell my therapist. It's so interesting. You know, we spoke about that part of me that's shy. I recognized it 5 times this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or that part of me that shuts down. It only happens when, you know, my father-in-law, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think being able to notice is such a major thing because it's so much self-awareness.
Right.
So if anything, because clients love homework. So when clients ask, I mean, if they ask for homework, I usually just say, try to notice what we spoke about.
Right.
Track it, you know, and bring it back in.
That's funny that people love homework.
People love parts that love homework, yes, because they think it's going to make the change come faster.
So interesting. That's really interesting. Because
if you don't want to change, you want it now.
Of course, I do. My work is just a little different because I do follow, like I am teaching intuitive eating and quote unquote counseling, not that I'm a therapist, but there's like teaching and counseling is different, but IFS is just really cool, honestly, because like I would, in my head, I would think people don't want homework. But maybe like the type A people are like, so what should I do now? And that would be
So
like
much of
stress.
that.
Yeah.
So much of that, Gila. So now
Right.
what? That's the
Right.
great, greatest question.
Right.
So now we felt that pain. Now what do I do? Now what?
Right.
As if there's like magic.
Right. It's true.
Right? A lot of change is acceptance. It's the road of a change and acceptance at the same time. Acceptance is one of the such an important ingredient to change.
I've heard that what you can't accept, you can't change. But you can't.
Exactly.
Is that an IFS term?
No,
oh.
That's a good one.
I know. I learned that from Peril Abramowitz, who I always quote, but you cannot accept, not change. Yeah, it's a good one.
So it makes so much sense. Yeah, it makes so much sense. Yeah.
Maybe we'll label that as, we'll name it. But you cannot change. What you cannot accept, you can't change. I wanted to say one
love
more.
That.
Yeah, I really appreciate you explaining this, and I feel a little better about my own therapy.
Oh,
and
I'm so glad. I hope this is helpful for people.
I think
yeah.
it is. I think it is because it's like it. Like what I was actually going to say is that like I think I do remember feeling like that in at a certain point in like my therapy journey. That like okay, now what? Like fix me. No, but what should I? Like I'm gonna die from this pain. So like, what should I do? Or like,
right.
Yeah, it's
Right.
really.
So right.
It's like
yes, that's really.
you know.
Yeah, I mean, again, IFS managers are afraid they'll die from pain.
Right.
But we'd work with that before we get to any pain. So hopefully by the time we're in IFS, we're meeting pain, people are not. There's not so much fear.
Right.
That's the whole thing is we're so, so afraid of pain. People are, human beings are so afraid of pain.
Right.
Yeah. They say, I think it's Michael Singer who says, pain is the price of freedom. That once you could feel pain, you're free.
Right.
But we live our lives organizing around pain. And
right.
That unfortunately creates so much more pain. But just
right.
recognizing that we're adults, we could feel pain. It's okay.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
It's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Shira. This was amazing.
Okay.
They'll come
thank
on again.
You, Eli.
Sure.
Would love to.
Okay. Have a great day. Have a good Travis.
Yeah, you too. Bye bye.
Bye. Thank you all so much for being here on my podcast, Get Into It with Gila. If you'd like to learn more about what I do and what intuitive eating is, please visit my website at www.gilaglassberg.com or follow me on Instagram at Gila Glassberg. Thank you so much. Have a great day.